My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Steve Turney hosts a great podcast geared toward mental health marketers called The Boost. Steve, tell listeners what you cover on the show.
The Boost is our podcast, and the tagline is conversations with people promoting mental health. And that's what it is. So it's marketers, company executives, therapists, and mental health advocates talking about what they're doing to move this industry and this important thing called mental health forward.
Amazing. And where can people subscribe?
I'm big on LinkedIn, so you can find us there, just slash Steve Turney, or you can find the show at marketingpodcasts.net or search for The Boost wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is David Auker.
But purpose, it really starts from asking the why question. And mission starts from asking the how question, but they often end up at the same purpose, which is a succinct statement of what you're all about.
David Auker is the author of over 100 articles and 18 books on marketing, business strategy, and branding that have sold over 1 million copies. A recognized authority on branding, he has developed concepts and methods on brand building that are used by organizations around the world. David Auker, welcome back to On Brand.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
You know, we should mention being back, because I'm not sure. I would have to check on the very detailed guest booking files that we keep over here on the On Brand podcast. But you may be the first guest that is back for a third time. So,
oh, that's good. And these first two have been such a pleasure. I'm glad to be back.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned earlier, thanks for having you back on, and I followed it up with thanks for continuing to produce amazing and insightful work. And I want to talk about that because you read, your output in terms of over 100 articles, 18 books. What in looking at your body of work, you know, so many people even doing a fraction of that might look at, okay, I've said what I need to say about branding and marketing today. But what do you find that is still needing to be addressed?
Well, it's really, it's a really good question, Nick. Since I started writing about branding, which was about 23 years ago, my first book was Managing Brand Equity and then Building Strong Brands. And then I wrote a book on brand portfolio strategy and brand leadership. And after that, what I've done is to look at some really major problems and approaches in business management and business strategy. And I've taken a brand lens to them. And it's quite remarkable, a strategic brand lens, I should say. And it's quite remarkable that was absent. For example, I looked at stories as a way to strategically communicate. And really, nobody had done that before. Nobody had taken brands and put it in the strategic, or taken stories and put it in the strategic branding space. And then I looked at disruptive innovation, and then this was the subject of our last talk. It's really quite remarkable the amount of sort of intellectual energy into disruptive innovation has been quite amazing. And you look at all those books, you look at Clayton Christensen, you look at Blue Ocean, you look at Kelly and all those great authors and thinkers, they don't mention branding. They almost literally don't mention it. And yet branding is vital. You have to position the new subcategory. You got to scale it. You got to build barriers, all branding problems. So anyway, and then I looked at a subject that I've been always interested in, and that is the concept of a higher purpose and productively addressing society problems. And here again, the concept that you need a branded program to do that is just nowhere. And the concept that a branded program can influence a business brand and therefore earn its keep and therefore be valued instead of a drag has been nowhere. And the idea that that program needs a brand and that brand has to be managed with all our branding techniques has not been there.
Well, I really like what you said, and even how you said it, the idea of brand as a lens, because I feel like sometimes, I don't even want to get org charts involved, but I feel like because we love org charts and we love putting people and tasks in the right places, that we kind of leave branding inside the marketing section of the org chart. And I think for all the reasons, it's a much bigger lens that is a part of several leading business ideas like you talk about, but it's not expressly stated, but it's essential. Why, if branding is so big, why do so many miss it?
That's a really great question. Of course, when the marketing revolution sort of hit, that marketing was strategic and not tactical. You know, Procter & Gamble developed this tactical model of how you manage branding, and for somewhere around 1890, that changed when brand equity arrived. And then it became strategic, but it's still every once in a while, as you point out, it disappears. I think largely because people in for example, nonprofits or social program organizations within big companies aren't branding people, and they sometimes don't have access to branding people or branding concepts or branding ideas, and so. Therefore, it kind of gets lost.
Well, and this is kind of teeing up your current work all about that higher purpose, because I think you're absolutely right. You do have people like in nonprofits that, because that's not maybe a core competency on the team, it's left out. But there's all kinds of great things. I want to dive into your new book, which I want to make sure we actually say the title of, because we keep saying your new book, and it is The Future of Purpose-Driven Branding. And I love when there's a good visual snapshot. It's got a great cover where you've got a Venn diagram of exactly what we're talking about, of business strategy and social programs. And as you talk about this, and you mentioned nonprofits specifically, there's a shaded box in the first chapter that I think is really helpful, because I think some the words that we use, the labels in marketing, are sometimes don't do us any favors. And you take that on right away with defining purpose, but also being sure to defining purpose versus mission. Would you say a bit about that? Because I think it's easy to confuse those.
Well, I thought about that a long time. I would have liked to have used purpose and forgot about mission. But it turns out that much more than half organizations use mission and not purpose. And so I finally decided that they kind of end up at the same place, and I will just use them interchangeably. But purpose, it really starts from asking the why question, and mission starts from asking the how question. But they often end up at the same purpose, which is a succinct statement of what you're all about.
So in knowing that, is that a key anchor, or where do you start the work of purpose?
Well, I think it is important to have a purpose or a mission that's meaningful, because you want to give permission for these social programs to thrive. And it starts at the top. And if the purpose is to build insanely great products, then social programs will tend to be an appendage, a drag on profits, but something that feels nice if you do it. And so you want to have either a business purpose that allows or encourages, supports social programs, or you want to have a side-by-side social purpose as well as a business purpose. And so right at the top, you have permission to go that route, to really try to address societal problems.
And say that, I mean, because I feel like this is, and we know from data out there that this is increasingly important to modern consumers to understand the companies, the organizations that they support and what they're doing. If an organization is looking at this and thinking, that's not currently where and how we're thinking, are there first steps in figuring out what, if any, or what type of social program would have the best fit for our brand?
Well, one thing that distinguishes my thinking from others is that I believe that the social effort has to include a signature program or multiple signature programs, those that represent the values and the passion you have to do something well, and it needs to be focused, it needs to have credibility, it needs to impact, and it needs to have a brand. And there's nobody else that's really saying that. Everybody else basically says, just put energy in that direction, create grants, create volunteering, create energy goals, and it's all good. But everybody does that or says they do that. And so what I say is that you really need to have a signature program. The other problem is that in the investment community, there's the ESG people that have this huge measurement thing that's kind of unwieldy, and there's also another group that looks for companies that are doing good. They're building windmills, or they're growing organic stuff, and they're investing in that. But what they miss is that the real productive people addressing consumer problems are not touched by either approach. And you look at, for example, Dove's Real Beauty, where they really change the way women are looking at each other, and their self-esteem program for teen girls made an enormous impact. And it's done so much for the Dove brand. It grew it from $2.5 billion to $4 billion in the course of 10 years, and it was all based on that energy they got from this Real Beauty program. I mean, one of the things where they called sketches, where they had an artist draw a woman's face based on her description of herself or a stranger's description of herself, and the stranger's was always much prettier, and that got 150 million views that were not paid for. They were free views. So it really drove the Dove business as well as doing some real social good. And this program's now gone over 13, 15 years. And it's made an enormous difference for the Dove business, and it's made an enormous difference for a social program. And it wouldn't be in the radar of these people that are looking for companies that whose fundamental business is to build windmills or grow organic food or something that directly helps people. And it wouldn't be on the radar of people that are asking what percentage of your board are minorities and do you use slave labor when you make things. Anyway, I think that the concept of a signature program is branded signature program is really, really important.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Steve Turney hosts a great podcast geared toward mental health marketers called The Boost. Steve, tell listeners what you cover on the show.
The Boost is our podcast, and the tagline is conversations with people promoting mental health. And that's what it is. So it's marketers, company executives, therapists, and mental health advocates talking about what they're doing to move this industry and this important thing called mental health forward.
Amazing. And where can people subscribe?
I'm big on LinkedIn, so you can find us there, just slash Steve Turney, or you can find the show at marketingpodcasts.net or search for The Boost wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
Now, back to the show.
So in talking about the importance of signature programs, I think one thing, especially in, because I do feel, you know, most of the time when we aren't, when we are challenged with something, it seems like there's often a lack of specificity involved. And I feel like, especially with general social involvement from brands, you kind of just, like you said, you get, I forget how you said it, but it's something like just general support. You're putting some money somewhere and you point to it every now and then, as opposed to really developing a program. And I would think also, I always hesitate to say that selling any of this internally is easy. But I would also think, in terms of tire kickers, understanding that that they're going to get better value over time with a signature program than just kicking dollars into different issues, different buckets as well.
Well, that's true. And I think it's not so much they don't believe the logic, is that it's really hard to implement. It takes time and energy, which they often don't have, and it you have to really find the right movement, the right strategic program, and that is sometimes not easy. And so a good alternative is to find one that already exists, an external program. So like you have Thrivent, the financial services company, and they adopted something like 15 years ago, Habitat for Humanity. And so now you've got a proven program, you've got an established brand, you've got a machinery to involve your customers and your employees, and So now your challenge is to, you know, to jump in and participate actively, and to and then to harness that connection between the two. So that becomes your signature program. But ThriveNet, over the last 15 years, has donated or caused $285 million to come to the aid of Habitat, and they've also generated 6.2 million hours of volunteer time. A lot of it in teams that they create, and a lot of it in Africa and other places outside the U.S. And so at the bottom line, it's done so much for ThriveNet. It really, talks about the being generous with your time and money and giving back. It's part of their values. This really supports those values, and it gives us enormous, not only visibility, but engagement among its employees and its customers. They have around 2 million clients, and they and their employees develop these action teams that take, go build homes. And you just can't imagine the affinity that results for Habitat, but also for ThriveNet.
You know, that's such a great example, ThriveNet plus Habitat. And, you know, it's interesting because I feel like I have a general level of familiarity with both brands. But as you were saying that, I feel like, wow, that really fits. Those two fit really well together. I don't, like I said, I don't exactly know why. So if someone's listening to that and thinking, yes, that's a direction that we might try, how do you find your Habitat for Humanity?
Well, first of all, the people that are clients or potential clients of Habitat and the employees of Habitat, they understand why there's a fit. They understand what an extremely high degree of shared values there are between those two organizations. And they build on these 15 years of cumulative of making that connection and that fit. The source of that I address in the book, there's really two sources. One is you take yourself, your capabilities, your assets, your values, your brand positioning, and you ask yourself, how could I employ this to do some social good somewhere? So you have Goldman, for example. They did a survey and they realized that there was a lot of potential for women entrepreneurs throughout the third world to make a huge difference, but they lacked background and education and they lacked access to finance. And so they did this a 10 million women program back in 2007 or something. 10,000 women program, and their goal was to get 10,000 women more up to speed by giving them education and giving them access to finance. And in 10 years, they met their goal and they doubled it. But so that's an example of where you take your organization and you say, what can I do with what I have? And Goldman, of course, has expertise in terms of working with entrepreneurs and knowing what they need and expertise in finance. And so that's one approach. The second approach is to look at the needs of a society. And again, you find social programs that were started because a person interacted with a homeless, somebody homeless, and something clicked in their mind. And that out of that evolved a food bank. Out of that evolved a showers for homeless program, and so sometimes something triggers you that may not be, maybe somebody in your family got cancer and so you started to build on that and you introduced that into the firm that you're working at, so you look at ThriveNet, for example, they would have never come up with building homes if they looked internally, saying what are we good at, and so on. But that's something that caught their eye. That's something that people were involved with, and they said we could scale this, we could leverage this. that fits with us. We could give our employees and customers a chance to really be engaged, involved. And so that's sort of from the society need working backwards instead of looking internally and working outwards.
I love that the difference in dynamics there that you cited. So in terms of getting people engaged, there's a great section of the book on brand communities. And I think these are two words that we often use together. We like the sound of them together. But what does a brand community do, and how can it work?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite topics. In fact, I almost wrote a book on brand communities instead of the one I did. It's such a powerful, powerful concept. And the idea is that you have a group of people that share the same interests or the same activities or the same passions, and they come together under the leadership or organizational abilities of a brand. And the brand is an active participant in the group, but also somebody, usually through a website, will organize the group and provide a vehicle for them to interact with each other, a vehicle for them to address problems and so forth. And, you know, the classic brand community, the prototypical one was Harley's, the Hogs. And that was back in the 80s, before the internet, before websites. And they created these events and mechanisms for the Hogs to communicate with each other. But that's what we strive for in terms of passion and intellect and activity and engagement. And so Patagonia is a company that has created a brand community around environmental stuff and with Patagonia and its lead. And they have all kinds of communities, sub-communities, and so on. I talk about a nonprofit in our area called White Pony Express, and they have communities of volunteers that process food that would otherwise go to waste and deliver it to people in need. They have communities of donors. They have communities of some of their clients, and they have a broader community that involves all of them. So the set of communities can be quite rich and interconnected, and it's just not necessarily a community.
That's such an important thing to keep in mind, too. I think we get homogenous with what a community is, and how it can be different is incredibly important.
You know, you think about the Thrive-In, and when they have communities that have done the habitat experience, have had the habitat experience or want it, then there'll be communities gone to Africa, communities that have worked together for several iterations, and in the larger habitat community, they have a brand name. It's called Thrive-In Builds, and but anyway, it's really powerful, because at the end of the day, the strongest brands have the most engaged and passionate, members, and that's kind of the role of a community, a brand community, is to create this, this force.
So you made me smile a few moments ago, bringing up one of the original brand communities of Harley Davidson, and that's because I think it's hard to live up to, but it's great when you have a brand community that will actually tattoo your logo on their skin. So
yep.
hats off there. But David, it is now time for me to ask. You've mentioned several great brands doing great work with purpose, but how about a brand that has made you smile recently?
Well, most recently it came to my attention. There's a Wall Street Journal article that sort of challenged Unilever, which is my role model and hero company, that they're wasting money chasing social programs. And they gave the example of Hellman's, they had this crazy TV ad on the Super Bowl where a linebacker is tackling people about to waste food, throw it away. And so they're saying, why would you spend all that money on that TV ad? And why don't you stick to the fundamentals of your business? That was a quote. Some guy from the finance community said that Hillman and the other Univer companies should stick to their fundamental business. Well, that is their fundamental business. And first of all, if you look back at Hillman's, which is 120 years old, they started out as a company that create a product that allow you to use leftovers, that allowed you to, extend the value of your food in your refrigerator. So they were from the beginning of avoiding waste. And even today, the way that they grow their business, if it is to go back to that heritage, to get people to use mayonnaise to exploit the waste in their refrigerator, the food that would otherwise go to waste. Well, in that context, they're looking around for a signature program. And in 2018, they said, a third, some staggering percentage of food in America is just dead wasted, thrown away. I don't know if it's a fourth or a third, but it's a big number. And so they said, well, let's do something about that. Let's develop a series of programs to help people not to waste. And so they've had over the years a lot of programs. One, there's this Super Bowl ad where the linebacker, coincidentally named Mayo, it's a true name, was tackling these people, one of which was a grandmother. And he's doing it, with a very aggressive tackle. That ad was estimated to have gotten around some $4 to $6 billion of views. $4 to $6 billion of views.
Yeah.
Now, if you went back to the fundamentals of business, which I guess this guy talks about, you should talk about how tasty and creamy mayonnaise is. Well, you're not going to get 4 billion views doing that. In the last 2 years, Hillman's mayonnaise has grown 10% 1 year and 11% another. This is in a category that never grows. This is the flattest of flat. And they had this growth spurt that's all due to this avoid waste program. So the point is that to me, you need a signature program that will add to the brand of the business. And all these other people are talking about, you got to build windmills or grow organic food. No, you can have a program that will attack wasted food incidences, and that can be your signature program, and that will help your business. So therefore, it's not, you don't justify do-gooder grants or volunteers or energy goals. You actually have this built into your business model. And then everything changes.
Well, and like you said, it all being built in, it's all very connected to the brand and its story as well. So a great smile and an on-brand smile with our conversation here as well. David, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Well, I have a blog called davidacker.com. It's inside profit.com. And they can go there. My next blog post will be in a few days, and it's going to be this Hillman's mayonnaise story. And it's just really such a great story. And I'm sort of got this Wall Street Journal article that I can position it off of, which is kind of handy. But that's one way. And of course, the book, The Future of Purchase-Driven Branding, is available wherever books are sold. It's actually, the hard copy is not available till October 4th, but you can pre-order it now.
Awesome. Well, we will be sure to link up to all of that in our show notes, which you can find at onbrandpodcast.com. David Acker, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks for having me, Nick. I really enjoyed it.
On Brand is part of the Marketing Podcast Network. If you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, you can always listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Steve Turney hosts a great podcast geared toward mental health marketers called The Boost. Steve, tell listeners what you cover on the show.
The Boost is our podcast, and the tagline is conversations with people promoting mental health. And that's what it is. So it's marketers, company executives, therapists, and mental health advocates talking about what they're doing to move this industry and this important thing called mental health forward.
Amazing. And where can people subscribe?
I'm big on LinkedIn, so you can find us there, just slash Steve Turney, or you can find the show at marketingpodcasts.net. Or search for The Boost wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.